You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome in to episode 320 of the Sources Say podcast, your go-to Kentucky basketball and recruiting podcast on the growing KSR podcast network. I am your host, Jack Pilgrim of Kentucky Sports Radio. Very happy to be joined once again by the one and only Sean Smith of Go Big Blue Country. Sean, how the heck are you?
I'm fantastic, Jack Pilgrim. How are you?
Oh, I feel like death. I feel like absolute freaking death. This weekend was an absolute whirlwind, like being totally transparent. I had a wedding down in South Carolina, and so I took off work that Friday and Saturday. I'm already off on Sunday. So I took wife, baby, and myself, the three of us, drove down on Friday, hung out with family. Then Saturday, I wake up. The wedding is at noon. And I'm just messing around a couple hours before the wedding starts. Before we leave, I am going through Twitter and I'm talking with my brother. He's like, "Hey, I'm a big fan of that Twitter Pro. You should just go ahead and subscribe to it. I promise you, it's worth the money." So I was like, "Yeah, cool, sounds good." So I go through try subscribing to Twitter Pro, and in the process of that, you have to verify your identity with your license and all that stuff. So as I do that, I submit the picture of my license. As soon as I hit submit, my entire thing just shuts off. It says, "You've been locked out of your account. You are an absolute fraud. You identity fraud. You committed, created this account before you were of age, before, I guess Twitter has this rule where you have to be 13 years old to create an account." And I guess 15 years later, Sean, Elon finally got me and locked my ass up into Twitter jail. So I was walking out the door to this wedding and I have Twitter gone, removed from my life for the rest of the day. So the game starts at 12:30 and I was already expecting to be, or 12:30, 1:30 or whatever it ended up being. So I was already expecting to be out of pocket for the wedding, not being able to watch it as closely as I wanted to. But I didn't even get like the Twitter notifications, the updates of, "Hey, this guy's going nuclear. Look at this lineup. Look at it." I got none of that stuff. And I just got home yesterday from South Carolina, yesterday late afternoon. And I basically spent that night, yesterday night, trying to get, fighting the Twitter gods to get my Twitter back. And I just now got it back unlocked. So I was completely out of the loop. I didn't get to actually sit down and watch the game. I mean, I watched it a little bit as it was unfolding while I was sitting there during the wedding, but you know how that is. So I just now got the chance to watch the game in its entirety yesterday. So Kentucky wins 111-102. I feel like a brand new man, although I got allergies that I think the weather changing and being out of town in different environment just completely wiped my freaking body out. So it's just been an absolute whirlwind, but I think we're back on the right trajectory. I'm feeling a lot better about things big picture coming out of a 111-102 victory over the Arkansas Razorbacks, Sean.
Yeah, you definitely had a weekend. And you wouldn't believe how many people reached out to me and asked if you were okay. And
did, that if did Jack die?
Yeah, I had like four people text me by Saturday evening. It's like, "Jack okay? Jack good?" I'm like, "Yeah, he's fine. He's fine." So glad to see you back. Glad to be back on here. Obviously, it's been a few days. This is kind of going to be more of an episode that's big picture stuff moving forward with postseason. And I mean, we're here, Jack. It's actually March and it's postseason basketball a week from now. I mean, there's a couple of big regular season games remaining against the two teams from the state of Tennessee, but overall, that this is a big picture feel to it with about where Kentucky's at, where some guys at or in the NBA draft and where they're at in seeding. But overall, I thought Saturday was avoided disaster because 9 minutes, 8 minutes left, it did not look good. I know you didn't get to feel those emotions because you didn't get to see it live, but there was some anxiety in Rupp Arena when they went up 9. But then Kentucky ends up winning by 9. Like, that's the craziest thing about this team is you never think that they're out of it in any situation, and they had two come-from-behind wins last week. So could have easily lost both of them. Instead, you win both of them. That's pretty important this time of year.
So, yeah, that win at Mississippi State was obviously one where they hadn't learned how to win in that way, kind of a back and forth. Whoever has the ball last is probably going to be the one to win it. Reed gets it at the buzzer. Like, it was that type of win. This one was different. They had kind of, this was new territory where you get down big. So you get up by 10 early in the second half. In rewatching the game after the fact, I was really disappointed in just kind of the mindset and in, I guess, intensity that they played with at that point. You could kind of tell, you know, Arkansas just kind of has this reputation for once they get down by double digits, they kind of just let go of the rope and say, well, on to the next game. Like, that's just kind of been what their MO all season long. So you can almost see that Kentucky played with that mindset of, we just got to get them down 10 and the game's over. And then they threw that punch back, and you kind of tell Kentucky was just not expecting that. I really didn't like that chain of events from being up 10 to down 9 over the course of a 10-minute span ish. So that part was really frustrating. I really did not like the mindset that they were playing with, and just kind of just assuming that they were going to roll over and die. But to this team's credit, those last 8-ish minutes down the stretch were pretty awesome. As impressive as it gets in terms of who was on the floor. Cal basically saying Antonio Reeves isn't going to play the last 8 minutes. Cal said he didn't do anything wrong, if you will. But when you put in Rob Dillingham and everything just kind of explodes the way it did, you just kind of have to ride the hot hand, and that's exactly how it unfolded. Kentucky flips that script to go from down 9 to back up 11 in the final minute, where it was an all-freshman lineup, call it the Nuclear Five or whatever, but it was a group of DJ, Reed Shepherd, Rob Dillingham, Justin Edwards, and Big Z as the closing group. And by the end, Kentucky just dog-walked Arkansas. I mean, it was a really impressive, and it wasn't just what they were doing offensively, Sean. It was the fact that they were able to string together defensive stops that we hadn't seen up to that point. So I know there's a lot of focus on the 102 allowed on, 53% shooting and 41% from three for Arkansas, but the way they kind of just locked in defensively and said, all right, it's time to just shut this thing down and end it once and for all. That's what you want to see. They found a new way to win against an Arkansas team that was clearly desperate, clearly playing out of its mind, making some uncharacteristic shots that they just hadn't been all season long. That's what you want to see. I like them kind of having another position opportunity to have their backs against the wall and have to figure out how to win. Don't like the first 10 minutes of that second half, but I love what we saw in the second 10 minutes.
Yeah, for sure. And like I said, finding ways to win both those games was a very important thing for this team. And when it comes to seeding and this time of the year and everything, Jack, and you want to be playing, you want to be winning going into the NCAA tournament. You still are figuring yourself out a little bit because you did just get Trey Mitchell back. And I think that kind of played into some rotation stuff that we saw, especially first half into the late stretch there at the end of the game. But overall, like you get two gritty wins. It would have been easy to lose that game when you got down 9. Instead, you fight and you make plays. You get the ball in Rob Dillingham's hands, and he started making plays. Rob and Z in the closing stretch of that game was one of the most impressive stretches of basketball I think we've seen from this team. Like it was unguardable. Like when they put those two in pick and roll, and the way that Z can space the floor and Rob's dynamic with the ball, and it can also knock down shots from the perimeter. Like, that was the Rob Dillingham show late. Justin Edwards got in and made a really important push with some baskets and some steals and some defensive plays, but was a little confused as to why Justin started each half, but then didn't get another look or opportunity until the closing stretch when Kentucky was kind of in crunch time. I thought that was a little confusing. It worked out, but that's where I think Trey working his way back in, Jack, probably played into a little bit of more, you know, mix up and some continuity issues with where Cal wanted to go rotation wise, which is just seems like it just keeps happening. But to give him a little bit of grace here, it's really hard when you've just worked DJ back in. Now you're trying to work Trey back in. This has been a never ending cycle and story with the season that I think it's kind of kept Cal off balance. But look, Justin played great down the stretch of that game. Like, confident Justin Edwards. Like, I don't think that he's done anything the last few games to kind of show any regression. So I was a little confused when I looked up and I was like, why has he only played 7 minutes? And then he goes in and has the home stretch, like things like that. But I think Cal was trying to ride Trey, but it just wasn't Trey's moment. It wasn't Trey's game, and it may not be his game tomorrow. This may be something that you're kind of working your way back just a little at a time. I thought Cal threw a lot at him for his first game back. He just wasn't ready for it. At some point, he will be, but you can't really force it. It kind of just has to naturally happen within what they're doing rotation-wise.
And Cal really dug into that Monday night during his call-in show. He basically said, we're in new territory. This was the first game that we've had a complete roster from top to bottom, obviously with limitations with Trey just because he's not at 100%, but that was our first game from start to finish where you had a complete roster at your disposal. And he said that puts us in a unique territory, Sean, because you want to have a set foundation and a set style that you bring forth. And he said that is going to be one big with four scorers around him. We're not going to try, you know, the reason why that came up was a fan asked, you know, what do you think about the idea of AB and Big Z playing together? And he said, yeah, we tried it. It did work at Vanderbilt, but we need to kind of push all of our chips in on four scorers with one big. I like the way they defended down the stretch. Those five that he kind of rolled with in those last 5 minutes, especially, they produced some high level defense and just kind of said, we're going to come up with just enough stops to let everything else that we do at the highest of high levels kind of carry us across the finish line. And he said, I think that's just going to be the way we play. Obviously there are going to be some outliers, and you know, what do you do with Ugo in that circumstance? Well, you basically say, if you don't defend, you're not playing. But if you do defend, we can figure out a lineup with four scorers and shooters around you where we can kind of, you know, try to maximize what everybody does well on the floor. He said that's just kind of what March is about. You want to have more depth than anybody that you're playing, where if your best player starts out one for 16 or whatever, 1 for 9, he said, I just don't want to have to ride the same guy to 1 for 19 to close out the game. I want to be able to say, if this doesn't work, let's ride a different hot hand. Let's see what else is going. And that's how you end up with a result like this with seven players in double figures, basically a tale of two halves of who was the MVP to start the game. DJ, Antonio Reeves kind of setting the tone. And then Big Z and Justin Edwards and Rob Dillingham kind of getting you across the finish line for the almost double-digit win.
Yeah, the balance in the scoring column, and then the freshman making plays. And going back, I don't know how many episodes ago, Jack, like we're probably thinking December, November, when everything was going great and they were scoring a ton of points and they were winning a lot of games and maybe they just beat North Carolina. I think we were talking about at one point that the freshmen have to be Kentucky's best players when it matters most. Antonio Reeves has put up an All-American top season. Should be an All-American. We know how good Trey Mitchell can be, which is why I think Cal kept leaving him in, because Trey at his best is one of Kentucky's best. Trey trying to work his way back to 100% isn't one of Kentucky's best, but he'll eventually get there again. But overall, the freshmen had to emerge. If this team was ever going to make a run or put itself in position to do so, it needed Rob Dillingham, Reed Shepard, DJ Wagner, Justin Edwards to emerge. You're seeing that now, and you got to see it in the closing stretch with a name that just a month and a half ago we probably didn't factor into this, in Z. And he has had enough pop and wow moments to me that I think it's convinced Cal. And I think that Cal was convinced and sold on him from Starkville. where he went and just didn't get bullied to the point that he couldn't play. And he made some big plays down there. You saw it again on Saturday. But the minutes kind of reflected it in the first half and early second half that it wasn't there. But then he went to him again, finished the game. So just that alone and then just the overall depth that they're showing of guys that can score the basketball. Justin Edwards just had a massive game against Alabama. Rob Dillingham has had his stretches. Reed Shepherd in Starkville. Like, it's been a different name every single game, while the consistency of a veteran like Antonio Reeves is there as well to mix in with it. But now you're kind of figuring out a piece in the front court, like with some size, not just Trey Mitchell, an undersized guy playing the five. You've actually got a guy that you're starting to figure something out. And it's been wild to me that Ugo a month ago almost had a triple-double against Florida, but then he's had his lows and struggles. Aaron Bradshaw had his struggles for weeks, and then he comes back the other day and put together what I thought was his best game. And then you get Z starting to find some consistency. Like, it's been a by-committee thing with the interior, but I think they're starting to settle in on who it's going to be. But then maybe that second guy is going to be whoever's hot and whoever's giving them some type of impact and role. And Saturday it was Bradshaw.
I think that's a perfect way to describe it, because it's tough to say definitively, yeah, I don't think Bradshaw is the answer here. It's very clearly going to be Ugo kind of anchoring things, and probably Big Z is the next guy. And then the very next game, it's Z that goes nuclear, AB having, you know, his moment, and then Ugo is a guy who almost seems unplayable. I feel like we're past that point, Sean, where, you know, I don't think there's ever going to be a moment with this team where it's, these are your six or seven, we're locking in with no variance whatsoever. We're not going to stray from this core group, because that is kind of the beauty of this team. We can zig while others zag. Like, that's kind of a specialty that this group has, and it can use to its advantage that nobody else in college basketball has. You almost have to play into that of, well, what if AB is the answer this time around? What if Ugo comes in and gives you something defensively that we hadn't seen, you know, that hadn't been on film in 5-6 games, that the other team wasn't necessarily accounting for? That's kind of the beauty of this team. You want to have the set, you know, the continuity and the structure overall. And that's why I think Cal kind of singled that out while kind of leaving the door open for some variance if necessary, depending on matchups, depending on who's right, you know, who's playing hot. Going into that game, I don't think anybody envisioned AB going nuclear, you know, 15 points in 12 minutes. I don't think that was even an expectation internally, but you also don't want to limit your guys from potentially reaching that. Like, you don't want to take that away from them if they are right. You know, what Justin Edwards did against Alabama going for 28. Like, you got to kind of leave the door open for your own kind of margin for error, instead of just for the bad, but also for the good in case something like that happens. So, yeah, I think Kentucky's in a really, really good spot, especially if you get Trey back to Trey. I mean, at least by Nashville. I think what happens these next two games really doesn't matter big picture for what his individual health is, but you really want to see him kind of playing back to pre-injury Trey by the time they, you know, obviously by NCAA tournament, but you'd like to see him kind of start to find his groove again by the time next week starts when they get down to Nashville.
And we're maybe getting a little too far ahead here, because we've got two regular season games that we have to talk about and discuss, and two important regular season games, especially the one on the weekend. That's a very important game when it comes down to what Kentucky could be seed-wise. But talking Nashville here in SEC tournament, Jack, this is a tournament coming up, and I know we've talked about this on recent episodes, but I'm putting a lot of stock in this one, and I'm putting a lot of value, maybe not in the end result. It doesn't have to end with a championship trophy in your hand on Sunday afternoon, Selection Sunday. But I think this is a tournament where there needs to be multiple games played. And here's why. If this team can play 2 to 3 games, ideally 3, if you're playing on Friday, but if it can get at least 2 to 3 games, and that gives 2 to 3 games more at full strength, that Cal's going to get to see what he wants to do with this roster. Plus, it's in a tournament setting where It's not the NCAA tournament where you have a gap in between. You have to go the next day, sometimes maybe the night before and then immediately in the afternoon the next day. But you're having to put stretches of play together where the scouting reports get quicker and quicker and quicker. And there's not as much time between. So you end on Friday afternoon, let's say, and you instantly have to begin prep for the next team. It's not the same time window, but it's a crunched, condensed one that I think this team maybe hasn't been in. And I think that's why that tournament's important, is to prepare him for the next one while also giving Cal some looks at what he wants to do with some consistency with lineups. Because to me, the more games you get when you've not had everybody at full strength, the better off you're going to be when you get into the tournament that matters. You want as many looks as you can get.
So we are in a pretty not phenomenal spot, but not a terrible spot either. We're really in a we control our own destiny from here in terms of if Kentucky wins these next two games, beat Vanderbilt at home, which the line just opened up, Sean, at 19.5. That's a lot of points. If you take care of business at home against Vanderbilt and then find a way to win in Knoxville, you lock up that double bye. If not, there are paths to basically every other scenario from 2 to 6, no worse than 6, no greater than 2. But I think the analytics right now kind of point toward a 5 seed, which I don't think it's a Thursday start, but it's not the worst case scenario in terms of if they were to actually slide up to that 3 spot. You then have to play the 9:30 p.m. time slot, on that Friday night, which, with a 1 o'clock turnaround the next day, you don't want to be in that position. That's, as you talked about the quick turnarounds and scouting and all that, they're in a nice spot to where if you get a 2, obviously that's best case scenario for this group, but you can live with a 4 or a 5 either way for time reasons and what the turnaround would look like. Really, I think worst case scenario would be that double, that back-to-back Thursday, Friday, 9:30 time slot is at the six seed. That's a worst case scenario. You don't want that. But you could kind of work yourself into any other scenario, but ideally you want 2, 4, or 5. Sean, how important is it to you to get that 2 or 4 to secure the double bye and, make sure that they get one extra day of rest while acknowledging that you still want them to play multiple games across multiple days to, get into that postseason mindset?
So going off time slots here, Jack, the 2 would play at what time?
The 2 on Friday, what time?
Yeah. Is that the night session?
Of course, I don't have that.
I think because it seems like we have been in the last 2 years, we've been in that late slot, haven't we?
Yes.
And it was such a quick turnaround for the next afternoon is what you're getting at, I think. But to me, I do think it's important. But at the same time, big on playing multiple games in this tournament and getting multiple looks at this team. But I think I don't want them playing 4 games. I think that's a lot, but ideally 3. That means they're playing Friday, Saturday, and in the championship game.
So the two seed would play the 7 and 10 or 10 winner at 7 p.m. on Friday. So here are our options right now. We would either – so if we are the 6 seed, we're playing at 9:30 on Thursday, and then that would follow up with a 9:30 game again on Friday. We're the 5, we play at 3:30 on Thursday, and then would then play again at 3:30 the next day at playing the 4 seed, which obviously I would – definitely love. And on the flip side, if we are the 4, we'd play on that 3:30 time slot and then would follow that up with the, I believe, would it, so if we're the 4 seed playing the 1, would we'd then play the afternoon slot on Saturday, right? We play the 3:30, because then the 2-3 game is before that, right? At one.
I think the 1 does the one seed gets the longest gap between games, right? So would the 1 seed play the early game on Saturday and then they'd have the longest gap in between, and then the same thing on Friday, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, because the 2 would have to turn around and play the 2nd game on Saturday. I think that's the disadvantage there, is you play late, but then you turn around and play early first while you get the extra break if you're a one, I believe, because I believe that the top of the bracket would play before the other half of it would. So, I mean, it feels like every year we come down to this week where there's some scenario where Kentucky's right on the cusp of – last year it was the same thing, and then they go on the road and win at Arkansas, and they get the double bye. So this team is in a position here where you can kind of treat this as some elimination games. If it means anything to you to get out of Thursday in the SEC tournament, win this thing out, and you're there on Friday in the SEC tournament. And, I mean, you got two tough games. I mean, I know Vandy, you're a 19.5 whatever point favorite, but it's a Vandy team that came in this building a year ago and beat you in the exact same game, senior night. Don't want that repeated. Then you lose again to that same team just a week or so later. So you don't want that happening. And then you go to Knoxville. Ending the season in Knoxville to me is a good thing, because I think you're going to get Kentucky's best punch and best shot in that environment, given how they got beat in Rupp Arena a few weeks ago. I think you're going to see Kentucky really grind one out Saturday in Thompson Bowling Arena and really make a push and try to get – to me, it's about some pride. And that's what this week is about. Close this thing strong. You're on a little bit of a winning streak here. You won three straight league games, which is that the first time this season that they've won three straight league games?
Since early January.
Gonzaga was mixed in there. That's right. Because it wasn't a three-game winning streak, but it's a three-game winning streak in the league. But Gonzaga was sandwiched between those games. So build some momentum here and get to Nashville, and let's see what this team's capable of. I mean, we know what they are at their best. We've also seen them not so good at times. Analytics, they took a dive again in defensive efficiency, but we've kind of stopped making that a big deal, I feel like, on this show, because we talked about how easily it was to climb 20-plus spots. Alabama also dropped 20-plus spots after one game at Rupp Arena, so you see how one performance can kind of dictate where you slide there. Not really looking at that anymore. I'm choosing to look at that they scored 111, and a team scored 102, and the team lost by 9. Like, just keep scoring the basketball. Just keep scoring the ball, which means put your most efficient lineups on the floor. DJ Wagner, I think that's a storyline that we haven't really got to. That was big, him knocking down shots. He built some confidence. He took good looks and good shots early in the game. He hit them, and I think that changed his whole mindset. And that was the most important piece that needed to be adjusted with DJ, was the mindset. Have some confidence in your game. Get your feel back. I thought he did an excellent job, and I thought that was an important thing too, happening now, because now he can kind of build on that over the next couple of weeks.
So looking at last year's schedule, you are right. I forgot that they try to give the longer rest for the one seed for the turnaround from Saturday to Sunday, not necessarily from Friday to Saturday, because last year Alabama was the one, played at 1 o'clock on Friday and then turn around, and they did have that first 1 o'clock game on Saturday, but then that followed up with, you know, obviously the longer break to the following day. So however it unfolds, I mean, at this point you control your destiny by getting to the Friday slot. If you get to the double bye at that point, you're giving yourself an extra day of rest, and you can't really pick and choose. You know, obviously there would be ideal scenarios. You'd prefer to be the one, but once you didn't take care of business in the games earlier, you kind of lost that privilege, and now you just got to go win games. That's where we're at. You just got to win tomorrow night. You got to go win in Knoxville and just kind of control your own destiny. Cause at that point you can slip down to a six, and you know, that could put you at that disadvantage moving forward. But I thought, Sean, big picture wise, we are looking pretty solid in the updated net, the bracketology. I believe Joe Lunardi just released that, and Kentucky is the number one overall four seed, flirting with that three seed line. So what are these next steps, the next 2 weeks with Vanderbilt, Tennessee, whatever happens in Nashville, knowing that they're already, and we talked, I mean, literally the last show, we talked, well, they're kind of in that puncher's chance you know, they have it at arm's length. Can they go fight and grasp it? Well, now they are in position to where they, I mean, they're the number one four seed right now and are right there in position to secure a three seed. How important is that for you for seeding purposes, for what the distribution of you know, what locations will be, what regional we'd get, you know, opening weekend, all that stuff? Is that gap from four to three that important to you? And is there even an outside chance at jumping up to a two, knowing that we're the number one four seed right now?
I don't think a two's in play. I don't. And unless the only way I think a two could be in play is if you end up, you went out here, you're on a winning streak. You've beaten Alabama in that stretch of play. You've won on the road at Mississippi State. You go to Thompson Bowling and win. Like, it's a pretty important stretch and key road games there, picking up some quad ones. But then who do you beat in Nashville, and what days do you beat them on is the other side of this. Like, if you're – so the way it's shaken out here, the way the seeding goes, Jack, who would Saturday be if Kentucky – ended up getting there? I mean, obviously Alabama is in there, Tennessee's in there if chalk holds, but you would be beating one of those teams on a Saturday. So you could get another quad one win. Then who are you playing on Friday? Like, to me, the safest thing is if you win the next two and you win your first game in the league tournament, I think you're a four. I think you're firmly a four seed. If you win the next two and win a couple of games in Nashville, I think you're a three, regardless of what happens on Championship Sunday. A two is a stretch to me because we've seen that Sunday does not matter in this tournament. And I think that Kentucky's got enough on its resume with a quad three loss to UNC Wilmington, and it's got some bad spots on its roster that I think is going to kick it down a seed line. Had you flipped and taken out UNC Wilmington, I think this team is firmly on the three line right now with a chance to plant itself into a two. I think that one's dropping it quite a bit.
So Steven and I talked about this on our last drive home, road trip home from, I believe it was Mississippi State. Do you think that they will get the benefit of the doubt this year with the seeding, knowing what the upside is in terms of a one isn't going to want to face this team in the Sweet 16 or early, it would be doing a disservice to the one seed having to play them a round or two earlier than the regional final or whatever, however it would work out. Would that change things in the committee's eyes to move them up or down even to get them on the opposite side of a bracket to try to make it more fair to whoever the one seed it has to face off against this team, clearly better than a four seed on paper talent-wise?
I was actually thinking that a few weeks ago, but it was more so when Kentucky was kind of hovering around a six, because I was like, there's a scenario here where if Kentucky's a six, they're better than the three that they're playing.
Absolutely.
So I don't know as much about the four or the three, because those ones and twos, I think they're viewed differently.
Mm-hmm.
And those matchups, I mean, a lot of it comes down to, like, there, you could have some really exciting matchups and Kentucky ends up getting to a three if they get to that second weekend. But to me, with this team, Jack, I don't know. I'm not putting as much into it this year about staying close to home, geographical stuff. I'm putting more of it about matchup based. And what does Kentucky draw as a first round opponent? Or who is that second round opponent? Like, who are they possibly matched up with when it comes to style of play? And I think a lot of people would agree here, you want somebody that likes to get up and down and get a lot of shots up. Because if that's the teams that you see across from Kentucky, I don't care what if Kentucky's a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 seed, because I like that matchup, because that team plays well in those settings, in those matchups. But overall, I could see that a little bit, because I think that I would love to know how the committee views Kentucky. I think national media have put it perfectly. Jeff Goodman's put it multiple times. Like, you can think whatever you want to think of Kentucky, but they're entertaining. And I think that the entertainment factor of this, the committee's probably going to pencil Kentucky. We know what the fan base does, and Kentucky brings out the best. But this is an entertaining brand of Kentucky basketball. one of the most entertaining brands in the last few years. Does that give them a bump? If they're playing great basketball here, that would be, so they're on a, what, a three-game winning streak right now, right?
Yep.
You win the next two, that's five. You win at least three in Nashville, you're on an eight-game winning streak going to the tournament. That may bump you more so than anything else, because how does the committee view Kentucky now that it's at full strength? So then if they're playing well and beating these teams, do they get an opportunity to maybe avenge a loss to Florida that they had? Do they get another opportunity against somebody that they lost to while healthy? Does that kind of cancel out something? But that quad three loss still hurts. It's there. There's one more thing, too, here at play. If they value quad one wins, you want Mississippi State to win, because you could push the one at Rupp Arena back into quad one territory and you pick up a sixth one. You get a seventh one possibly in Knoxville. Now you're talking about a team, if they go on a run in Nashville, Jack, they might be 9 or 10 quad one wins. Yep. Now that may put them in position to knock on the door of a two. I love this time of year.
And how wild is it that we look back at this schedule and see how hot St. Joseph's was early, knocked down to a quad three. Miami seen as a guaranteed quad one going into the year. Former Final Four team, you know, this team that was playing as hot as anybody, you know, kind of off. That was supposed to be this high octane juggernaut battle. That's now a quad three. Like, you just go down the list, and some of those opportunities that we thought we were going to have, obviously you're rooting for, you know, Mississippi State to, you know, jump two spots back in. I mean, and that's so close. You just want that one to stick, but they've had some of these opportunities kind of stolen from them. You know, quad ones that we kind of just assumed we were going to get, you know, it sucks that we didn't win that Gonzaga game, because that was also one that could have done wonders in the selection committee's eyes. But man, I do look kind of take a step back and go, what is the committee going to value here? Is it going to be, you know, how much are they going to discredit that streak, you know, the cold streak where Kentucky lost, you know, 5 of 7 and all that? Like, are they going to use that against them more than seeing what this team's upside is and how hot they are playing at the right time going into March, knowing damn well what that's going to do to whatever the top two seeds in that region are going to be, how that's going to impact their decision-making and whether or not they say, you know what, let's just overseed them and, you know, make them prove it, so we don't have to screw over, you know, a helpless two that, you know, feels that they, you know, didn't deserve that or whatever. I feel like there's just that mindset of, no matter how this thing unfolds, it wouldn't shock me, just knowing big picture what Kentucky has done, kind of giving up some of the things that they've done on the wrong way, but also not wanting to hurt kind of the top end babies that they want to protect too. I think there's going to be an interesting balance there, depending on how obviously SEC tournament unfolds, but that's definitely what I'm keeping an eye on.
There, to me, there's value in winning late more so than value in winning early. Like, one of Kentucky's best wins obviously is North Carolina. That was a massive win because it gives them something in the non-conference schedule to have on its resume. Because if without that one, there's literally nothing there, because you just mentioned you go out and you schedule a Final Four team from a year ago in Miami expecting them to kind of push for the ACC regular season title. Nowhere near. And that's deflating, because that was the SEC-ACC challenge. Like, that was kind of set for you. Just didn't work out. Like, you got an impressive win. You got a win at the time that everybody was really excited about. And looking back on it, was a great night of basketball, but it didn't really do anything for your resume. Winning late, though, Jack, it's about, like, time here. And when you look at it, so, like, that North Carolina game, I mean, you were both there.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
I don't really remember a ton about it, because it feels like it was a lifetime ago. It was fun, great win, but I don't remember all the details. So much has happened since then that I kind of don't look at it as much. I look at recents and the recency bias of this thing now. Does the committee do the same thing? I'm probably willing to bet that they do. Who are you beating and how are you playing now? Because it's fresh on your mind. That's like on the flip side of this, teams that struggle down the stretch dip. Teams that play well climb. And I think that you could get some bump for Kentucky if they're playing well and if they're on a winning streak going in. And when you look at it with quad one, so you got three teams that have double-digit quad one wins, Houston, Purdue, and UConn. I'm looking to see if there's anybody else, and I don't see one. But then you got a team like Alabama who is 3-8 in quad one games, where Kentucky's 5-5. Like, there's a lot of differences when you actually break it down. And some of these teams, and you've seen a lot of people talking about it recently, some of these conferences, like the Big 12, every game's a quad one game. Even if you lose them, it's helping you because it's just building up what you're doing resume-wise, strength of schedule, all that stuff. This is a team, Jack, that just a couple weeks ago had two quad one wins. And then they beat two top seven teams in the net two Saturdays apart. And it completely flipped the way we viewed their resume. Then they get another one in Starkville. Like, they've added and they've helped themselves now that the stretch of play that they had there where they lost some games at Rupp, I'm not thinking about those as much anymore. I'm now thinking about the most recent thing, and I think the committee does the exact same thing. Even if they say they do the whole body of work, I'm willing to bet it's hard to look at a whole body of work without at least looking at how they're playing in this box of sample. And Kentucky's winning games.
Six of their last eight, and of the two losses dating back to February 6th, you have one where you crumbled down the stretch basically against Gonzaga, and the other is a buzzer beater win at loss at LSU, you know, on fluky stuff.
That's like the one I wish they had. Yeah. I wish they had that one in there instead of having that loss, but you can't change it. They got it back a week later.
Because there's just that balance of, you know, would you rather them be sitting now on a six game winning streak currently than potentially 7-8 and then 9-10-11 game winning streak going into the NCAA tournament? I don't know if I trust this team's mindset, killer mentality to go into March Madness on riding an 11 game winning streak, thinking that they've conquered all. Like, I almost, looking back at it now, knowing that they're in position enough for that three seed, still in position for that double bye, I almost feel good that they kind of experienced that type of heartbreak, knowing that that's what happened. That's what happens if you overlook an opponent, you think that something's going to, you know, whatever. I almost like that one, you know, if they went out now, you're talking a five-game winning streak going into SC tournament. Say they get the double bye, then you're riding eight game. You can live with that knowing that the heartbreak of Baton Rouge is still relatively fresh on the mind. But if your last heartbreak was February 10th, that's a long way away. I kind of like the way this has kind of this unfolded, assuming that they take care of business in these next two, which is a terrible assumption. You never assume anything with this team, but cautiously like where things stand right now, Sean.
Yeah, I do too. And I like that they were in that environment and they lost, like you said, and then they come back a week later and they win one in similar fashion, you know, as to how they lost one. Like, I think that what have I said all season long? This game has a way of bringing you full circle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's done it multiple times this year. Now what you want to see is you're going to get everybody's best shot down the stretch here. Like, Tennessee is going to be an absolute battle on Saturday. Like, that building is going to pop. And it's going to be one of the best environments that college basketball's seen all year because Kentucky's walking in and you're getting a fan base that knows and feels like it has a good team and a shot to go on a postseason run with some guys that have been in that program for a very long time. You're going to get a great environment there. You could see that matchup again a week later. Very possible. And we've seen that before, Jack, where it's been last game of the regular season or last week, and then you get it again in the league tournament. So you're going to get plenty of looks at Kentucky in the next 2 weeks, plenty of championship level atmosphere looks. That's what the league tournament's about. Is, are you building confidence? Are you, if you, I want to see them win in this tournament. I think everybody watching the show wants to see them win in the upcoming tournament, but I want to see something that gives you that feel good going into the NCAA tournament, because it's been a while. Like, I've not had that, we've not had that feel good feeling since what? Actually, you can't even go back to PJ Washington's year, because they lost to Tennessee and then you had the injury to him. So I don't know who all was feeling good when that tournament started. So maybe back to the Malik Monk team or Shea and that
was the one
won the tournament. And then you, that kind of is what gave you hope that they could go on a run. That's been missing the last few years. We got it stripped from us with Emmanuel Quickley, Tyrese Maxey. Didn't get to see what that team was capable of in that environment. I think it's important to have something to kind of hang your hat on going into the next tournament. And I think this fan base, if they go on a run in Nashville, if they were to win the SEC tournament, I'm not, this is not saying anything bad, because I know this program doesn't really just value SEC tournament championship. There's no banner and referendum for it.
Right.
But I'm willing to bet if they win this one, it will be one of the more celebrated moments in a long time, because what it does is it gives you confidence and hope going to the next tournament that things are right again. Because let's look at it. When they're winning league tournaments, they also have teams that can win the next one and go on runs. That's a common denominator. There's not been runs when they've not had runs in the SEC tournament. That's why I think it's important to have one.
Yeah, that'd be worst case scenario, losing early. Like, it, you got to at least get to Saturday, Sunday, get, put us in position for Sunday and just kind of let things play out as necessary. You just can't afford that what the hell moment that we kind of got with this group last year. Like, that was just a late game, 9 o'clock, lose that one and then go, well, what do we even do from here? What comes next? Like, that's just an uncomfortable position to be in that you don't want. You know, obviously you want to avoid at all costs. Kind of switching gears ever so slightly a bit, Sean. Today was, I think, a moment that solidified some things that Cal had talked about recently. I mean, even just as late as Monday night during his call-in radio show, talking about we need to take a step back and kind of soak this in, soak this run in, appreciate this group, because they're not going to be here forever. This is going, the fun that we're experiencing, the entertainment value, the excitement, the highs, we're going to see a roster reset this upcoming summer. And it kind of became reality in a sense when Jonathan Givony of ESPN put out his updated mock draft, where Kentucky had not one but two top five picks in this upcoming 2024 draft class. And both of those guys are coming off the bench for Kentucky. Rob Dillingham at number three as the number one American in the entire draft, and Reed Sheppard at number five as the number two American in the entire draft. It is very, very safe to bet on those two being gone next year. I know it's, you know, Reed's a different cat and
people are not going to like what you just said.
The hometown thing, you know, I get that Reed's decision is going to be different than probably anything we've experienced in a long time, because there is an argument in a dream for him to come back. And, you know, whether it's an unfinished business thing or, you know, if whatever lucrative NIL deal is on the table for him with staying close to home, with, you know, just working toward his degree. Like, there's so many different little aspects of his decision that make his complicated. But I'm telling you right now, if he is a top five pick, he is gonzo. 0.0% chance he will return to Kentucky. I don't care how, what type of dream you have in your head. Well, what if he values this instead? If he's a top five pick, he's gone. And I don't know if in my gut he actually truly is a top five pick, but the fact that he's even going to be in the conversation, I just don't want fans to get their hopes up thinking, well, we can just kind of push our chips in for next year. We can focus on whatever. we need to really soak in this run for better or worse. What is happening right now? We've never seen anything like it offensively, but also the personalities and the fun and the, you know, just the camaraderie, all that stuff. This is the time to kind of just take a step back, get all of your big picture takes out of, well, we got to the trajectory of the program, this, like, forget all of that stuff aside and understand that this group will not be the same next year. We need to appreciate what's to come in these next 4 weeks, what that looks like, because it's going to be fun, but it's also going to be short-lived from a just pure days and weeks standpoint. It's going to be a fun journey. We need to, you know, take a step back and really, really soak it all in.
I agree 100%. And that's been Reed Sheppard's been a topic of conversation, and not just how he's performing right now, but what does sophomore Reed Sheppard look like? Well, he could look like an NBA rookie is what it could look like. And I had somebody actually ask me yesterday, like, how do you feel? And I thought they were talking about the Vandy game. And I said, well, I mean, I think Kentucky went, no. Like, is Reed going to be here next year? And I'm like, man, like the anxiety that's there with that decision and stuff. But look, like, this is a kid that's completely outperformed any expectation. And he was a very good player coming in out of high school. I didn't see this version of Reed being here at some point, possibly. He's good. If he were to come back, he's a preseason All-American. Should be in consideration for it now when you look at his numbers and his stats and things like that across the board. But Jack, those are two guys that are literally coming off the bench at Kentucky. And if they were to leave and they were to get drafted, it would be Cal's next thing that he hammers home for years and years and years to come. I had two guards that wouldn't even start that were top five picks in the NBA draft come to Kentucky. And like, that would be his next thing that he would just keep hammering and keep hammering. If it happens, you hope that it is on the tail end of a national championship Final Four run. That's the scenario that you're hoping for here, is that Reed gets his run in blue and white. Rob does his thing and makes big shots. Those two guys are built for March. I know that's been a whole phrase about Kentucky's built for March. Those two guys, in my opinion, are 110% built for March. Not sure about the rest of the roster, but those two enough to me makes Kentucky built for it. Because they got two guards that can make shots and can do it. That has been missing.
Yeah. As we saw this last week, those two, more than anybody, Reed at Mississippi State, Rob against Arkansas, the last 5 minutes of the game. That's the example. I was on the phone with an NBA scout today talking about this entire roster and, you know, the different guys picking each other's brains about just kind of what that looks like and who, you know, what each of them does well, what their struggles are, that stuff. When Reed came up, you know, it was the conversation of, you know, he asked, you know, what's your real gut? Do you think Reed goes? And I told him, I do, because this is a kid that, as you said, has exceeded every expectation that he possibly could have, anybody could have had for him, under a magnifying glass that nobody has really felt here at Kentucky, I don't think, considering who he was, where he came from, what his high school accolades were, dad and mom, all of the stuff going into it, the way he has handled that pressure and still gone above and beyond just in terms of on-court production, that's a game changer. But also understand, he is a 6'2 point guard, combo guard, that can't shoot any better. He's not going to jump any higher coming back next year. He's not going to make better passes. He's not going to have better, you know, better basketball IQ. All the things that he could have possibly shown NBA evaluators, he's put on full display this season consistently from start to finish. It was the narrative early on, well, he looks like a lottery pick now, but he's doing it against non-conference opponents. What happens against SEC opponents? Well, he goes on the road and drops 32 on your head and hits a game winner to beat Mississippi State in Starkville. Like, every little kind of box that NBA guys have had for him waiting to see if he could check them, he's gone, take that. Like, what would Reed Sheppard have to gain by coming back next year from a pure NBA standpoint where he's projected right now, Sean? He is going to be making $25 million guaranteed over the course of a three-year rookie contract. That is something that NIL, no matter what your wildest NIL dream for him is, and he would break those, whatever record there is for NIL, he would break them. But even still, that number wouldn't even sniff what a guaranteed rookie deal would look like in the NBA. So I know it's fun to dream. I know it's exciting. I want another year of Reed Sheppard like a breath of air. Like, obviously, everybody does. But I also don't want that kind of what if to take away from this current run and what this could mean for this group, knowing that what better way to end this than a Final Four run and have Reed Sheppard, a kid from the mountains, Sean, from your neck of the woods, that kid go top five in the NBA draft after winning a national championship or the Final Four. Like, understand what that would mean for Kentucky basketball. I know it's kind of taboo to talk about NBA and one and done and all that stuff with Kentucky, but understand if a homegrown talent is able to prove himself at the highest level imaginable, go to a Final Four, and then become a top five pick, that is the ultimate storybook ending. There is no better high. Don't dream of what the what if is for next year when we're living in that right now. That's kind of my, it's a sad reality, but also it kind of adds it adds weight to what all of this means in a March that already meant more than just about any under John Calipari. This is a massive, massive 4-week stretch that we're about to come across.
Yeah, it is. And hopefully it ends with Reed Sheppard stepping out of a Bluegrass Tours bus at inside Rupp Arena, holding up a national championship trophy. Like, and then you're right. Like, I hadn't even thought of it. I think you hit me with that and caught me off guard about that is actually added to how important and big this stretch is. There's a lot at play here, and there's a lot that could go right. There's a lot that could go wrong. And that's probably every March though, right? For a lot of programs, but it's kind of, you're looking at it through a completely different lens though, when it comes to Kentucky, given the last 4 to 5 years, it is weighing on this program's shoulders. And it is, it's still weighing. Maybe we put it down for a few months here in the regular season. That first night of the NCAA tournament, it's going to feel like it. And I'm just hoping that it doesn't feel that way to those guys on the floor. That's the important piece to this. Cal's got to do a good job that pressure is not inside that locker room or on that court. These guys play loose and play freely. But, I mean, Reed is incredible. Like, I was in that boat too there for a while where it was non-conference, but then when you started seeing him do it in the league and you see him do it against the best of the best, like, he's an NBA player. And I've argued and argued and argued with multiple people. It's like, there's no chance he'll go. He cares too much about Kentucky. Well, I care a lot about Kentucky too, but if you throw that much money at me, I'll move wherever. So, like, you get what I'm saying here? Like, it's not, but, and then selfishly, we want him back.
Of course.
And if he came back, great. I'm going to have a good time next year talking about him on the show. But
if there's ever been a kid that would make a what the hell did he just do decision, it is Reed Sheppard. So I don't want fans to not dream, but I also want it to be an expect him to go and hope to be surprised mindset more than anything. Like, live your life as if this is going to be a brand new roster. Expect a mass exodus because this is a team of a ton of NBA talent. And if you get a surprise from Big Z coming back, like, that was one that I talked about with this NBA scout earlier today, where it was like, this is a kid that may be a fringe first round pick right now, but if he comes back and puts it all together the way he very clearly has shown he's capable of doing for 40 minute stretches, that's a kid that could be a top five pick. Like, that is a jump of, like, whoa, baby, type of jump that is very much on the table for a guy like Big Z. So if you're going to kind of dream big and think of, like, well, what about these guys? Do it for Aaron Bradshaw. Do it for Big Z. Do it for Adu Thiro. Do it for some of those guys that have a lot to gain by coming back. Reed Sheppard does not have a ton to gain by coming back. He is who he is as a basketball player, a damn good one that NBA evaluators have already seen play at the highest of high levels. He's not going to grow another 3 inches by coming back next year. He's not going to improve his vertical to 46 inches. Physically, he is who he is, and that's a very good thing. What else is a very good thing, Sean, is Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals, making eating better every day easy, wherever tomorrow takes you. Be ready with pre-prepared, chef-crafted, and dietitian-approved meals delivered right to your door. You'll have over 35 options a week to choose from, including keto, calorie smart, vegan, and veggie, and more. And there's even more to enjoy with 55 nutrition-packed add-ons that make your weekly meal planning even more delicious. What are you waiting for? Get started today and have a good, feel good week of meals ready to go. 2 minute meals, fuel up fast with Factor's restaurant quality meals that are ready to heat and eat wherever you are. Snacks, smoothies, and more. Discovered a wide variety of easy options for the entire day, like breakfast, midday bites, and more. Sign up and save. We've done the math. Factor is less expensive than takeout, and every meal is dietitian approved to be nutritious and delicious. Factor is the perfect solution if you're looking for fast, upscale options done easily, flexible for your schedule. Get as much or as little as you need by choosing 6 to 8 meals per week. You can pause or reschedule your deliveries anytime. No prep, no mess meals. Factor meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. There's no prepping, cooking, or cleanup needed. Sean, I know you have gotten your box. I know you are absolutely thrilled for them. I've already devoured my box. And I'm telling you right now, it is like the frozen meals that you get from Kroger, Walmart, or whatever. Like, I know in your mind, when you look at them, you think, well, that's just probably going to be just another. But when you actually open the plastic and see what's inside, it is like going to your favorite restaurant down the street and having it in your hands, pre-made. All you have to do is shove it in the microwave and it is ready in 2 minutes. I haven't experienced anything like it. I'm going to be totally transparent. I have not. I am in love with them. The flavors you get, you know, it's not like it's super, super healthy if you don't want it to be, but it's also not like absolutely terrible. Like, it's a fine balance of high quality food that doesn't skip out on the flavor for nutrition, but it's still jam packed with nutrients. It's that perfect balance that every foodie would love and appreciate, Sean. I am certainly one of them, and I thoroughly enjoy devouring my box, and I know you are going to as well.
Yeah, the sun-dried tomato chicken with zucchini noodles. I told you that I was going to take that to work with me. I did, and it was delicious. And I would actually take a full package of just those. That's how much I like that one. But no, the efficiency too, like of how quickly you can have a good meal too. I think that's probably my favorite part about it, especially this time of year with me with postseason and basketball and stuff going on. I need to be in and out as quickly as possible. But yeah, that's by far my favorite one.
Yeah, absolutely. Head to factormeals.com/KSR50 and use code KSR50 to get 50% off. That's code KSR50 at factormeals.com/KSR50 to get 50% off. I promise you, you won't regret it. It even slight ounce. It's going to change your life just like it did for me as well. Also, Sources Say Podcast is brought to you by Andy Ludeke and MyPerfectFranchise.net. Andy is a franchise consultant as well as franchise owner and helps people find franchises that fit their skill sets, financial requirements, time to commit, and more. His services are 100% free, and he's here to help if you have any questions about business ownership. You can learn more and contact Andy anytime at www.MyPerfectFranchise.net. And one last message from our latest partner, Monticello Bank.
Well, hello, Cindy.
A lot of banks are changing hands these days. Not Monticello. We've been building relationships since 1895. And with each passing year, we've grown.
Hello, Cindy.
Hi.
And expanded our services to meet the needs of the communities we serve.
Aren't you forgetting something?
Monticello Bank, Equal Housing Lender, Member FDIC.
Well, Sean, this has been a lot of fun, man. Very important week for Kentucky basketball. I can't believe that we're in the last week of the regular season for Kentucky basketball. Just, it blows my mind, but a very, very two big games coming up. An interesting one against Vanderbilt, considering what happened last year. Just can't have that happen again. It just, you can't. You got to go out again, 19.5-point favorite. Go take care of business in that one. What do you need to see from your Cats on Wednesday night? Again, a sleepy 9 o'clock, stupid. Whoever invented these 9 o'clock tips, I hate your guts. I do. I absolutely despise you. Everything about you stinks. 9 o'clock games can just kick rocks and die forever. But all things considered, it's one that the Cats have to take care of business in.
Yeah. I don't need to see what happened against Arkansas. I don't need to see Kentucky down 9 with 9 to play. Let's avoid that. To me, start to finish, control it. Just put them away. A blowout at Rupp Arena on senior night, to me, would be the perfect way to kind of go out on a year where you've lost more games at Rupp than you would ever plan to. So blow someone out. Don't let Vandy hang around. Don't give them hope. They're playing with nothing to lose. Just get it over with early. And this is a game where it was Tennessee one year. I think it was the COVID year. Tennessee came in and rallied and beat Kentucky. It was not a great Tennessee team. And then you had last year, Vandy comes in and does it. Don't let that happen this year. So start to finish, control it. Beat them, put them away. Let the seniors go out with a bang, and then go to Knoxville and gear up for a really important regular season finale.
Last thing for me, your favorite memories from Kentucky's two rotation seniors, Antonio Reeves and Trey Mitchell, thus far. Hopefully we see bigger moments to close out their, officially close out their careers. But up to this point, your favorite moments from those two seniors?
I think Reeves has to be the game at Arkansas last year, like in a game where you didn't think Kentucky could really probably win. And he puts them on his back and just torched Arkansas. So I would say that, and then mix in all the stretches of play where he's had, where he just went nuclear at times. And then Trey's, to me, I'm trying to think what Trey's, my favorite moment of Trey Mitchell. I still, honestly, the two together, I'm going to put them into one, is when they're half court defending against Florida on the road, and they right there were gearing up to get a defensive stop in the most important part of the game. I'm going to put those two in the same memory with Trey, because I thought that was where I was like, you got two senior leaders locked in together here.
Mine is Toronto. See, I think having Trey Mitchell in Toronto, knowing that Cal didn't really have another choice at the big, at the five position, with Ugo going down, with AB out, and obviously with Z not even in existence yet, it forced Cal's hand to play a certain way that opened up the door to something unbelievably different for this team. And I think that has kind of just changed the trajectory of this team, this program, this style of play, the offensive success and production, all that. I think that is, his impact and the way he was kind of emerged as the straw that stirred the drink early allowed all of this stuff to happen in terms of style of play and all that. So I appreciate the way Bob Huggins' time at, I wish him the best, but I am glad that unfortunate circumstances led to Trey Mitchell finding his way to Lexington, because it's been an absolute game changer for Kentucky and has made us dream big about this team and what it can do in March. So, Sean, this was a blast. We'll see you at Rupp Arena, 9 o'clock on Wednesday, taking on Vanderbilt, hopefully for a senior night victory. Sean, appreciate you for coming on, man. Where can fans find your work?
You can follow me on Twitter at GBBCountry.
Find me on Twitter as well, at Jack Pilgrim KSR. Go subscribe to KSR Plus. Join that community over there. Make sure you're subscribed here at KSR KSR YouTube page. Keep on commenting. Keep on subscribing. We appreciate each and every one of you. We will see you Thursday night.